Welcome to Deeply Rooted, a web series on mindset. My name is Tony Wisdom, aka Tony Gaines. I've spent over 20 years in the music business as a producer, engineer, label owner, and executive. This show is dedicated to changing the narrative on success. I reached out to the most successful people I know. I want to know what drives them, their greatest mistakes, their best advice, their secrets to success, and how all of that has shaped who they are today. Take a journey with us.
Here we are, Deeply Rooted, Season 4, Episode 7. We're going to call this the COVID edition. I tested positive for COVID on Tuesday, so I'm a little under the weather. I'm actually kicking COVID's ass, so it doesn't, it's not that big of a deal. But, this season, oh my God, we've had some amazing conversations. And, I won't call it a coincidence that this season has focused on rock star amazing women. I know we opened up with the wonderful AJ Gupta, which set the tone for the whole season. But since then, we've been all across the globe. We've had some powerful conversations, and we're getting ready to have another one. When you talk about rock star amazing women, our next guest, Mimi, is the epitome of that, honestly. I mean, I watch her serve, selfishly, if that's a word. Like I said, come on, it's COVID, right? My brain's a little foggy. But she serves every single day. If it's not, she's a teacher, so that in itself, makes her one of the rock stars of our community. But just on Clubhouse and how she shows up for our Gupta family every single day, is very inspiring to me. And I learn a lot from Mimi. So I'm not going to drag this intro on. I'm going to bring her on and, I'll let you feel the awesomeness. So here's my friend, Mimi Loftus. I hope I said your last name right. I don't think I've ever said it words.
It's Loft Us.
Loftus. Okay. I love it. Yeah. Because that's what you do, right?
I love it.
Mimi, how are you? Thank you so much.
Oh, Tony, no, I'm thanking you. You're so just so gracious and beautiful. And, the work that you do, you talk about serving and unconditionally. This podcast is, and everything that's moved from it, it's a movement at this point, right? You have merch, man. Yeah. That means you've arrived, right?
No doubt, right?
You're incredible. So thank you so much. I'm so honored that you invited me here. So thank you.
Awesome. Well, it is my honor. But so before we get into it,
yeah,
can you give me a brief background of who Mimi Loftus is professionally?
Sure. I have been an educator for many years. I'm just going to say that. I'm not going to give the actual number. Almost I would say about half my life. So, and it's been just a drive and my reason for existing. So I've worked in both secondary and post-secondary. I started out at a small college in the Bronx where I was the youngest faculty member, and I really enlightening experience teaching in that community, that environment. And I've done public schools. I taught in a public school in Manhattan. I've taught in private schools. I've been all over the country. I've been in, when I was in New Orleans, I was the education coordinator and senior writer for the public television channel there, the public access television channel there. And so I did a lot of training in film and video production. I actually wrote the curriculum for the state of Louisiana for that, for film and video, which is taught Oh, wow. in there. Yeah, it's taught in their system. And I did a lot of, you know, training, working with grants, and it's always with young people because those are my babies, you know? And now I live in Texas and I teach at a school in Southlake, and a private school in Southlake, and which is a suburb of Dallas.
You know, something interesting that I was reading in your bio, that school is a one-to-one. So how many students do you have?
Yeah, I call it the epitome of private, right? Like, yeah, every class I teach is one. I teach one student at a time. We have right now, I think we have 45 full-time students, maybe a little more right now, like in the 50s, I imagine. We opened and I helped open the school, actually. I am the longest remaining member of our faculty. I opened it in August of 2015. We opened with 13 kids.
Wow.
Yeah. It's really extraordinary.
If I remember correctly, you guys just won a pretty prestigious award, right?
We did. We got School of the Year.
Yeah. Oh,
yes. Yeah.
Well, congratulations on that.
Thank you. Yeah. So our goal is, because, you know, we're pretty competitive, is for the first time to be the school that wins it 2 years in a row. It's never happened.
Let's go.
So, yeah. Yeah, we can do it.
Well, that's awesome.
I
don't know. The way I learned in school wasn't really conducive to the way they taught in school.
Sure.
And I didn't realize that until I went back to college. I went back to college in my 30s, I believe. Yeah, it had to be my 30s, right? But I took an online course, and the way that they taught that, it really worked for me. And I was able to thrive, you know? So I can only imagine what one-on-one does.
Oh, Tony, exactly. Because you're absolutely right. You're not alone in that. You know how many times I hear people say, I don't think I'm dumb. I never really understood. The way I learned is not the way that they teach. And that's it, because learning styles are unique. We can talk about how every individual has, you know, we have fingerprints and we have, you know, voices and our, you know, retinas. We also have styles of learning. How do we take in information? How do we process it? What matters to us? What are our life experiences that have led us to this point? You know, what are some, like, you know, areas where we need to develop and grow? You know, are there some strategies that we can use? So basically what I do, and I did this a lot even before I found Fusion Academy, which was extremely time consuming when I have a room of, you know, 25 students, especially in high school. College is a little bit easier because there's, you know, there's a syllabus, you just follow it. But with high school, because I always write my own curriculum, I'm thinking about, you know, 25 individuals in this room, how am I going to make sure that I reach everyone instead of just, you know, going to the middle and then the ends get forgotten. Yeah. But that's what we do. That's, you know, I take it really, really seriously. So every student, when he comes into my room, the first day we do an inventory about, like, their interests and what do they love? Why do they get out of bed in the morning? What makes them excited about living, you know? And then we talk about, you know, when did they feel most empowered and when did they feel like they were, you know, just really just doing their thing and jamming, and I lean in on that, and I have just this, you know, breadth of experience, and, you know, I've had such good fortune to travel a lot and experience a lot of different cultures, and I read constantly. So I just pull from all of that, and I'm like, okay, so here's what we're going to do. We set a really super intense, scary goal for the semester, and then we plot out how we're going to achieve it. We also talk about like what could possibly get in the way. I call it the kryptonite. Like what could keep you from getting your goal? And then we come up with strategies for how to like actually, you know, deal with that when they come about, and techniques that we can use. And you should see, I mean, like, honestly, Tony, the transformations I witnessed before my eyes within days, you know, sometimes weeks, but just, it's phenomenal, because sometimes for the first time in their lives, they feel like valued and heard and empowered. Mm. And it's like, you know, that's the whole point. We all want to tap into our greatness. And so I love seeing that, you know, with the babies.
I know. And to have you as the, like, oh my God, like you absolutely changing lives. Right?
Yeah.
So, okay. So who is Mimi the person?
Okay. Well, you and I both know that I am love, right? But I also like, I love cool projects. I am someone who seeks fun. I really have like my Myers-Briggs is ENFJ, and my E is like high 70s. My N is in the 80s, right? So I'm extroverted. So I love the fact I put the extra in extroverted. So I love that. I am patient. I am kind, and I am really, I love figuring out like who other people are, how do I fit into this whole thing? And like, I just see this world as like tapestry, you know, and I love mosaic, you know, I love that, the idea of mosaic. And so kind of seeing how all of the pieces fit together. So yeah, I don't know that I can say it. It's just like, you have to just experience it.
I am.
Come aboard, Tony.
Well, I love it. That was a great answer. And you are love. So, I mean, that's, you know, that's as simple as it really needs to be, but thank you for going a little bit further just for the sake of the question.
Sure.
So, Mimi, how do you define success?
Success?
Mm-hmm.
I think, well, success is, I guess it's really just achieving. And so it doesn't matter what it is that you're achieving. And let me not use you. It doesn't matter what I'm achieving as long as I am. So if I have a goal to be more present, and I lean into it, and I every day I work, you know, more and more at being present, then I have succeeded. If I have a goal of being peaceful. Yeah. I mean, I think peace has a lot to do with success, actually. Mm. Yeah, I do.
And what do you mean by that?
Striving sometimes can be a little bit, it can detract from purpose, I think. Mm-hmm. So what I mean by that is that we get so caught up in the process and the movement that we lose sight of the joy in the pursuit. So when we are peaceful about feeling, you know, that content too, and as I know that that's something that people think is negative, but I think contentment is, there's peace and contentment as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm striving to, you know, build a garden, and today I put in as much work as I could. But, you know, I didn't get everything done, but I'm at peace with the amount of effort that I put in.
Sure.
So my day was successful.
Absolutely.
All right. And I love that. I love it. So what drives you? What's your why?
Um, actually, it all goes back to injustice. And there have been a couple of, actually pretty early on in my life, where I witnessed real disparity. And it was upsetting. It was really troubling for me to witness such, you know, gaps and how some people live and others do not. And so I decided that I was going to do whatever I could to bring some balance to the world. And, you know, when I was teaching in the Bronx, I was living in the Upper West Side, and I would take a train to 149th Street, and I would change to another train and then go up, you know, to the South Bronx. I have to go past Yankee Stadium every day. But you know, I had friends, and they were like, why are you doing this? Why are you going to the Bronx every day? I mean, you could teach anywhere you want. And I was like, because they deserve me as much as anybody else. It's like, just because I could be, you know, you could teach at NYU, you could be at Stuyvesant, whatever. That attitude and that mentality was so distressful to me. I was like even more determined, you know, to be there and find a way to bring, you know, opportunity and education to do my part, you know. Like, I remember this one student, Tony, I had, I was teaching a psychology class, an intro to psychology, and we were talking about the power of language and how what we say, these little words that would make an impact and actually, like, the ripple effect that it will have. And I said, you know, in your own homes, because some of my students in this class were adult learners. A lot of parents. And I said, if you notice, you know, you now that you're a college student, the language in your home is going to change. And you're going to stop saying to your kids, you know, if you graduate high school, to when you graduate college. And that subtle shift, that if to when, high school to college, is going to change everything. So years later, I'm on a crosstown bus and, you know, I'm strap hanging, right? And this man walks up to me and he's like, Professor, you probably don't remember me, but I took your intro to psychology class. And he recounted that story. He goes, I changed the language in my home. And now my son is going to college. You know, like, that's just, like, that's one life, but then his life, and then, like, all of that, you know? Yeah.
Well, I was going to ask you if you kept up with any of them, or, like, if you were able to see the results of that. So that's awesome.
Oh, yeah. Right? Yeah. I know. I'm not active on Facebook directly. I do link my Instagram account, but I would say probably half of my friends on Facebook are former students. Yeah.
That's so awesome. Yeah. So, okay. Can you think of a major setback in your life that set you up for later success?
Just one? Yes, absolutely. So my freshman year of college, I had studied piano for about, from the time I was like 4 or 5 years old, I started taking piano lessons, and I was studying and, like, really, really just dedicated, you know, hours a day, yada, yada. And so by the time I was in high school, I was playing some really complicated music. And I decided, like, I've always wanted to help. And honestly, I knew that somewhere in me that I was a teacher. But at this point, I thought that I wanted to be a therapist. I thought I wanted to be a psychologist. And I found this program that was a music therapy program. And it was in New Orleans. And so let's just do the equation. So you have an 18-year-old in New Orleans. Not conducive for you know, academics, right? Yeah. So what ended up happening, I failed out. I failed my freshman year of college. And it was devastating, of course. It was the first time that anything like that traumatic had happened to me. But if I hadn't, I wouldn't probably have followed into what I'm supposed to be doing, which is education. So I think back to that a lot. And I know, it was an expensive lesson financially and emotionally and psychologically, but I learned a lot from it.
I love that. And just on music therapy, my son, he's a sophomore in college right now, but that's what, when he decided to go to school, or that was what he picked initially. Mm. Now he wants to go into coaching, so he switched it to education because he wants to coach high school. But I remember him telling me, what music therapy was, and I was like, that is awesome. Like, that is really cool. So I just wanted to share that little piece because that's awesome. My relation.
Right. Yeah. Not a lot of people are familiar with it, but it's,
Yeah, I thought it was cool. And it kind of goes to his heart and like just kind of where he's at mentally. He's such a great kid. I call him Barack Obama. He's like one of those people you don't really believe exists. You know what I'm saying? Like he's just one of those guys. So
I love it. Yeah.
Okay, so what is one of the best or most worthwhile investments you've ever made? It could be an investment of time, energy, money, etc.
It would have to be time, because let me not say that. It's time. So the last, year of my dad's life, I actually had the opportunity to be where he lives. And it was very difficult, but to be able to spend that last year of his life with him and to see him on a regular basis, and connect with him in ways that we hadn't while I was growing up. That was great. And my mom has dementia. And so she lived here in Texas with me for 3 years, and also very difficult, but some of the most beautiful memories, like her voicemail. When she got her phone, I was in the car with her. She was like, I'm driving. And she went through it like 4 or 5 times to get it. And she was cracking up after everyone. And finally I was just like, just do it, right? So every time I hear her voicemail, I can think back to that moment when we were together and how funny it was. And, I would say time investment with family really it's the best.
Yeah, I agree. My mother passed in 2019. And prior to that, about 7 years prior to that, she had a stroke, and it affected her mind slightly. I mean, she was always a very sharp lady, but it affected her mind. So she also was suffering from an opioid addiction, and she was bipolar. So dealing with her was really hard at times because of the stroke and then the was all these funny little moments with her that I get to keep, like where just if she wasn't in that state, the memory would be completely different. So I love that answer, Mimi. Time with family is very important.
Yeah, for sure.
So what act of kindness were you once shown that you will never forget?
So there was this point when I returned to New York. I lived in New Orleans. I was in New York. I moved to New Orleans, then I moved back to New York. And when I first moved back to New York, I was working, and it's actually when I met these people in New Orleans, and they moved to New York. And so I was part of my transition back to the city. And they ended up being like grifters and like, yeah, really shady business. I got stories, don't I, right? And so at this point, like I had just invested, talk about not a great investment, like time, energy, money, whatever, into this, and then had absolutely nothing to show for it. Mm. And my uncle, who is, he runs a restaurant, a very successful restaurant on the Cape. It's a bakery and French restaurant. He knew people in Queens who were like a you know, part of the bakery. And so he put me in touch with them, and he was like, just go see them and see, you know, like maybe they have work for you, whatever. Because at this point I was just like, you know, living in the most expensive city and what do I do? So I went out, I took the train to Queens, and I met with these guys, and they were like just appalled at, you know, what I had just gone through. And they're like, oh my God, I wish we had work. We really don't have anything. But the guy went over to the safe, and he opened the safe, and he pulled out $500 in cash, and he just handed it to me. Uh-huh. And his partner's like, you know, kind of looked at him like, what are you doing? He's like, dude, she needs the money, you know? And I really just blown away by that gesture. And it was really, it wasn't like this bridge, you know, it wasn't like a $10,000, right? It was $500, but it was like, it was hope. It was real kindness. It was absolute altruism. And in that moment, like, I started to restore faith in humanity, because I had just been like just rolled over by human beings, right? Like just treated horribly. And here was this complete stranger who was like, yeah, there you go. And so pay that forward.
And you know what I love? That's why I love that question, because it kind of brings us back to a state of gratitude. Like it kind of forces you to go there for a minute, you know? AJ says it all the time. Like, you never know the difference that you can make just from something simple. $500 is not a small amount of money, but it's also not a large amount of money.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And the fact that, you know, and I'm also a firm believer that, you know, the universe, you earned that, the universe was looking out for you, you know.
Right.
So,
yeah.
But
yeah, I mean, just the fact that he didn't even think about it, Tony. It didn't, you know, and he wasn't like, you know, pay me back when you can. It was, he just gave it to me, and that was it. And it was more than the money. It was the, like I said, it was the restoration of a belief that there are good people in the world. And that's what I needed more than anything.
I love it.
Yeah.
Okay. So in the last 5 years, what new belief, behavior, or habit has most improved your life?
This is a tough one, Tony. Because 5 years, I would say gratitude and expressing gratitude, not just feeling it, but expressing it, and also getting rid of expectations. Wow. The combination of those two things, right? The more grateful I am, the more times that I can look around and really show, because I'm pretty grateful, you know, and honestly, teaching in the Bronx was one of the best things that ever did for me when I was like, you know, I was 26. And so it was, I just never complained. but to express the gratitude and to find ways of sharing it, and then to release expectations and attachments. Because when we're attached to things, that's where the suffering comes, right? And when we expect things, you know, inevitably we're going to be disappointed. It's just, right? Because we're attaching our own ideas to outcomes, and that's not our job. That's not for us to do. So,
and yeah, that's a lesson that I'm just learning this year. And it's not, you know, it's one of those things that you might innately understand, but like to actually have somebody put it in words, you know, and I realized, like, you're right. Like, I'm putting expectations on all of these things, right? Like, I expect when my friends come over to hang out that they're going to hang out in the way that I want them to. And if they don't, then mm-hmm. I'm disappointed, but I'm making that expectation. Like, it's all on me. So, I mean, I love that answer because that's just for me, not 5 years, that's 5 months.
That's awesome. Yeah. I know. That's what I was saying. Like, 5 years. That's
Yeah. There's a lot of lessons in 5 years, right?
I mean, there's a lot of lessons in the last 5 days, friend, right? Let's be honest.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So I'm going to rephrase this question a little bit differently for you.
Sure.
You have a kid coming out of your school, coming out of your college in the Bronx, going into the real world for the first time. What advice do you give that kid?
Oh, all right. Take your time. Ask good questions. Learn to listen. Seek counsel from people who have gone through some stuff. And remember that, you know, specifically with the students in the Bronx, right? Like, I saw this a lot where they, because they were starting to evolve and change and succeed and find their joy, there were other people in their lives, sometimes even family members, who were really not kind, right? Like, they were trying to pull them down and be discouraging and then even flip it and say, you know, oh, you think you're all that and like all of that, right? Mm-hmm. And so they had to realize that their path and their journey sometimes meant releasing, like letting go of people because they were heavy. So that's something else too. It's like, just because someone is in your life today doesn't mean that that person has to be in your life forever if they're not serving you, you know? And just, if you come from a place of kindness and compassion and understanding and to do the right thing, you know, it's not easy. It's lonely. It can be lonely. You can become a target. People may not get you, but that's where character comes from, is doing the right thing.
I love it. Yeah. Because you're right. Especially, you know, coming from particular environments, you know, I hate this phrase, but there's the crab in the bucket mentality.
I knew you were going to say that. Yeah.
Right. But, mm-hmm. and it, you know, it is what it is. And I'm kind of come from that environment myself. And, you mm-hmm. know, when you're, like you said, when you're trying to do right, everybody, you know, you start getting the, well, who do you think you are? You're not better mm-hmm. than me, you know, and it's hard. Mm-hmm. And like you said, mm-hmm. it's lonely. It's, you know, deeply rooted is lonely. Not a lot of people understand what I'm doing, you know, the people around, you know, but Who cares? It's not about you. Right. It's about the difference that you can make.
That's right. And what does Anil always say? What other people think of you is none of your business.
It's none of your business.
So yeah, it's difficult. And sometimes it's tempting, I think, to fall back into familiar patterns and habits and surround yourself with people that are familiar because it's comfy and it's like, you know, a little warm blanket, but there's no growth in that. And anyone who is like, you know, challenging you is probably doing so from a place of fear. And, you know, that's their lesson to learn. So just keep on.
I love it. And it kind of leads to this next question. The mantra here at Deeply Rooted is kill the ego, ignite the soul. What does that mean to you?
There's a lot of fire in that, huh? I guess it's like, coming from a place of, so the ego is this thing that can direct, and it can, you know, it can be a good thing, right? It can be, as long as we monitor and keep it in check, I guess, right? If you come from a place of truth, which is your soul is your truth, right? And your heart. If you come from that place of truth, and you realize, you know what it is? Actually, you remember who you are. And that word, remember, if you think about it, like, here, I'm going to go English teacher on you, okay? Hold on. So we've got re, which is again, that's the prefix for again. And then member is like you're part of something. So you're joining the collective when you remember. So something that comes into your brain or into your heart, whatever, that you are joining, you're returning to the source. And when your soul is ignited, there is, first of all, there's nothing you cannot do because you're coming from a place of pure love, intention, and like your gifts, right? Mm-hmm. And then you become, or you are becoming, thank you, Michelle, you're continuing to become the you, right? Who then returns and is part of the soul. I kind of feel like I went on a little bit of a, like, remember those old matchbook cars, the, right, like this. That's where I took you. But it is, you know, I don't, the phoenix keeps coming back, and that's part of this idea of ignite the soul, right? Like phoenix comes in, that's my dog's name, first of all, but this mythical figure keeps presenting itself to me in my life recently, and that's also what comes up in my brain for this. When your self disappears, yeah. And you come from that heart space. And that's the beauty. And you return to the source, join the collective. Remember.
I love that. I love that. That's gonna stick with me forever now.
Yeah.
Good. Okay. So we all have that moment in our journeys where we want to call it quits, when we are at our lowest, so to speak. When you reached that point on your path, how did you fight through it and what kept you going?
It was actually pretty recently. Oh. And I think that there's this a lot, right? Like we do dips and everything, but I was so in my head, danger, right? I was beating myself up, questioning my choices, you know, just a lot of really negative self-talk. And I felt the pain. I lived with the pain, because I think that's a really important thing. Like in our country, we're so obsessed with happiness, right? It's in our Declaration of Independence, for crying out loud. But like, we're really so focused on happiness, but there are so many emotions, and everything only exists in opposition, right? Like, so we really can never actually know happiness unless we've felt despair. Yeah. So feeling the feels, which was not easy, you know, it was pain. It was a lot of pain. And so I felt it, and I cried, because I think crying releases. I acknowledge it. I cried. And then I just started to focus on the things that actually matter. And I journaled. You know what, to be honest, putting my bio together for you was really helpful as well, because it forced me to look at what I've done and to celebrate some moments. And, you know, our friend Issa has been, like, for months, Tony, asking me to write out a list of badass moments. And it's blank. That page is blank. Mm. And so, but I actually feel like now I can do that. I can list the badass moments. And part of that is the preparation when you asked me to give you a bio, for me to sort of take that, like, look at things and then to acknowledge my gifts and to say, like, if not now, when? And, you know, if I don't do this, even if I'm not where I'm supposed to be, or I thought that I would be at this age of my, you know, at this point in my life, if I don't do this, thousands, tens of thousands of adolescents will not get this, yeah, all the love. And so I have to do it. And so that's what pulled me out, is it like taking it off of me, right? I killed the ego, and guess what happened? I ignited the soul, and I removed all of the distractions, and I was like, step up, girl, and just, you know, do it. Just do it. Just do it. So, yeah, but it's process. I really think that, like, going through the whole thing is really important, and coming out.
I 100% agree. That's something that I think is one of my superpowers, is at some point I realized that, right? Like, one thing you said, life is duality. So there's no happy without sad, right? And right, even my worst moment, the thing that I'm embarrassed about, or I wish I never would have done that, sure, right? Even that experience, and for me to feel that embarrassment, or for me to feel that shame, I now have the knowledge of a place that I never want to go back to. And I know why. Yep. You know? So
yep. I do. Awesome. Yes. Yes. That's beautiful. That's beautiful. Yeah. Shame is a tough one, but it is one of the best teachers, man.
Yes, it is.
Mm-hmm.
So on a day-to-day basis, Mimi, if you feel mm-hmm. overwhelmed or unfocused, or have lost your focus temporarily, what do you do?
Well, kind of what I just said about the, you know, the thousands or tens of thousands of young people. So there are actually two students from three, actually, who really I returned to, and they remind me of what this is all about for me. I had a student who, he was like, the first day of class, I always ask them to write something. And then what I will do is I don't grade it. I just put it in a, you know, file. And then on the last day of the semester, I return that piece of writing to them, and they get to actually see their growth. Like, they're like, oh my God, I can't believe I put this ball, right? Like, it's great. So this kid, I know his name, I won't say it, but what he wrote about was the fact that he was 18 and the only one of his friends who wasn't dead or in jail. And he was instead enrolled in a college, and it was a basic English class, it was a remedial English class, but he was doing for him. So I think about him, and then I think about this other woman, this I could say her, I won't say it. Oh, she was amazing. She walked into class, same kind of thing. She's like, I'm gonna fail this class. And I said, yeah, you are. With that attitude, you absolutely are. And she was like, what? I was like, well, you just said it. Like, you're the one who said you're gonna fail this class. So you sure about that? And she was like, oh man, what? No, I'm not gonna fail. And so from that point, like, she took every English class with me and like some other ones, some social sciences and stuff, and graduated first with her associates and then with her bachelor's. And so those, I think back to these, you know, these people, the guy on the bus that I told you about, right? Like, I pull from those memories, those moments where, like, I recognize my gift. I recognize that it's a responsibility, and it's selfish for me not to stay focused and to do what I'm here to do. It's not okay.
I love that. It's one of the things that keeps me going too, because I'm similar to that. I have a lot of friends, but I also have a lot of friends that are dead, you know? And
yeah,
I went from, you know, because early in my life, I was, you know, an extreme knucklehead, you know, like I was headed down that path. And I dropped out of high school to basically be in the streets, you know. But something I'm very proud of is when I made a decision to actually, you know, change my life or start doing something for myself, you know, I had to go get a GED, right? And I have a GED and a bachelor's degree, and I'm very proud of that, you know, like, just because of the journey that it took me, you know. So I love that, because that is part of my motivation too. I have friends that, you know, they're never going to see this Tony, right? And a lot of this Tony is kind of for them too, you know, because it's like, we all didn't go down this path. We, you know what, there's a couple of us that are shining lights, because, you know, if you ask me, that's my new answer. Who is Tony? Tony is shining light, you know, and very proud of that. And it keeps me motivated too. I just kind of wanted to lean into that.
Absolutely. Yeah. You said something that triggered a thought, and this is the problem with being a good listener, is that, like, when you're so mindful in the moment, like, something comes in and it's, and then it's gone. But yeah, if it comes to me, well,
okay. So we only have a couple questions left. This is one of my favorite. If you could have one gigantic billboard that millions of people would see with anything on it, what would it say and why? It could be a few words or a paragraph.
Well, I don't think it should be a paragraph, because attention spans are terrible, and just being realistic, I don't want to cause accidents, but you know, I know I would have it. You know how some of the billboards now are like electronic, and right, so it would be I love karaoke. I have karaoke microphones. When I'm feeling bummed out, I pull out one of my microphones. One of them has like flashing lights. I put on you know, what, a, and I just say, I do this around by myself and I just dance around and I sing karaoke alone in my apartment. Who knows what people are thinking? Okay. So, but once upon a time before they had, you know, Bluetooth karaoke microphones for $20, I used to sing into a wooden spoon around the kitchen while my mom was, you know, cooking or whatever. So I would have like an evolution of me singing and dancing and have it just be from me as a little kid and then with the wooden spoon. And then like, because like, I just feel like when you see someone expressing joy and feeling joy and being in joy, it brings you joy, right? Like just try not smiling at someone who's like dancing around like an idiot. So I think that's what my billboard would be. It'd be me dancing and singing karaoke to everything from Prince to Queen.
I love it. So what you got, there's one song, you get one moment, you're going to kill it. What is your go-to karaoke song?
Bohemian Rhapsody. I crush it.
Wow.
The whole thing.
Now, that's not something you hear every day. Freddie Mercury is vocal heaven.
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I crush it. In fact, every chance I get, I do that at karaoke. I was at the, what is that? The Hard Rock, the resort in Cabo San Lucas a couple of summers ago. And this is, I was, my ex and I were there and with a business trip of his, and the president of his company was like, are you going to do, I was like, I'll do karaoke. And he was like, well, okay. And so I signed up and I signed up for Bohemian Rhapsody. And he was like, you're not going to do this, are you? I was like, I'm going to do this. Yeah. And you know, I'm also really good at like getting the crowd. Remember I told you about like my E is off the charts. So I can do some crowd hype and I got the moves. I can dance. Yeah.
Oh, I got to see it. So if the opportunity ever presents itself, I am requesting Bohemian Rhapsody, just so you know.
Done.
Which, okay, kind of leads to this next question. Do you have a song that you would consider the soundtrack to your life? Or is there a song that you turn to for strength? Yes.
Oh, okay. It used to be Hot for Teacher by Van Halen, but those days have passed. back in the day, yes. But let me see. Well, that's like turning to for strength and having a soundtrack are different. You know, it's so I'm gonna share this story real quick. When psychology class I was telling you about, when the first day of class, what I would do is I would have the students, you know, I come in, not a word, like, you know, professionally dressed, da-da-da, I go to the front podium, yada yada. And I was like, all right, I'm gonna ask you 20 questions about me. And I would ask them, like, where do I live? What kind of car do I drive? What kind of music do I listen to? Do I eat meat? Am I vegan? Do I have blah, 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 like all these questions, right? Inevitably, they had me driving a Lexus or a Mercedes, listening to classical or jazz, vegan. Like there was, and all of this was based on their idea of who their professor should be, right? Had nothing to do with me. So all that to say, they were always so shocked when I was like, my go-to music is angry alternative. Like I love intense. Like Green Day is one of my all-time favorite bands in the whole wide world. I love Disturbed, Tool. Like, so for inspiration, when I need to get pumped like that, right? Okay. There's a song by a woman named Storm Large.
Okay.
It's called Ladylike. And that is, if I could say that one song actually is it now, it's that song. Ladylike by Storm Large. She's from Portland. She's amazing.
I'm going to check it. I'll have to go check it out. Because I go listen to all these songs if I don't know.
Storm Large.
So, Mimi, this has been great. And just like I knew it
would
be.
Yes, friend.
How can we support you? Is there anything we can do to support you?
Yes. I'm working on an event that I am going to launch in 2020.
Okay.
I have two target dates. We'll see.
Well, you're not going to launch it in 2020 because that would have been
2022. Sorry. I'm a time traveler, Tony. Okay. I don't know about your world, but I go where I want. Stop pinning me down. So yeah, 2022. Thank you. Mm-hmm. That's funny. So when I get a little bit closer to that, if you could promote it, that would be awesome.
Absolutely. Without a doubt. I'll promote it every single show. It'll be on the little ticker down there.
Awesome.
So yes, thank you, Mimi. I can't say that enough. I always enjoy you. You have one of the most calming voices. Isn't that, it's the first time I've ever like actually got to see you talk at the same time.
Yeah.
But between right. you and Norma, like you guys put together like some meditations or something, and I'm all over it. Like.
Yeah. You know who actually Natalie Concepcion. Natalie has mm-hmm. I think we got the hertz of her voice, and it's something like 512 when she's doing her meditations.
Yeah.
It's really extraordinary. Yeah.
Yeah. I love it. So well yeah, I'll let you get back to your Sunday. Thank you. You have an amazing day. I will see you in the morning.
I'll hear you.
Just randomly, I was meaning to ask you. If you want help with those quotes, I don't know if it's like your thing and you enjoy doing it, but if you want help, I will do that because I just didn't want to step on your toes.
Oh, you're absolutely no. We're like family, right? Like, yeah, love it. Thank you.
Yeah, love it. So, all right, love you, Mimi. Have a great evening.
Thank you, Tony. I will. And you know what? Just you're incredible. I hope you realize that, okay, and that you recognize the amazingness of who you are and what you're bringing to the world. So thank you.
Thank you.
Mwah.
Have a wonderful evening.
I will, sweetheart. You too.
So yeah, like I said, another great conversation. Merch on the website. We're on Instagram. We're on Facebook. We're on YouTube. We're trying to grow this thing, man. If you get value out of this, share it, you know, give it to somebody as a gift. This isn't mine, it's ours. I'm doing this for us, y'all, so we can learn lessons from wonderful people, amazing people like Mimi, you know. So I'm gonna get back to my COVID. I'm wore out, but I love y'all, man. Peace.